This is Resources Committee is called order, and it is, of course, exactly when we're supposed to start. Today before us, we have confirmation for Acting Commissioner Tom Irwin and Kathy Forrester. Mr. Irwin, would you like to take the stand, or this is your last chance to run? And let the record show that attendance is Representative Roses, Wilson, Seaton, Co-Chair Gatto, and Chair Johnson. Mr. Irwin, thank you for coming and welcome. And I guess I'll start this confirmation the way I start every confirmation hearing is, why do you want to do this job?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Co-Chairman and Committee. I want to let you know it's a privilege to be here. Why do I want to do this job? And that's the perfect question, because my wife and I prayed about that for 2 months. Let me back up. You should know what I am. I'm a Christian. I love the Lord. I'm not perfect, but that's my basis. Second thing is, my wife, we have 3 months and 27 days, and we're going to make 40 years married. And I count. I have a huge blessing there. I have two daughters who have moved to Fairbanks. They're Alaskans. I have a son-in-law in Fairbanks, and my life is them, and now I have three wonderful grandchildren. And that's the basis of why I decided to come back, in addition to, I think, tremendously of our governor. And why am I here? I'm here because I think Alaska needs two things. Alaska needs resource development so my children and my grandchildren can have careers here. If we don't have resource development, they have to go somewhere else. But the second thing, and equally important, if we don't do resource development correctly, we ruin Alaska. And I want Alaska to be as special for them today, for their day, as it is for me today. And I think in this position of Department of Natural Resources, with the governor we have, because we're fully in sync on philosophy, with the team that we're building a DNR again, and understand, I don't look good because of me. It's because of the DNR people I work with. It's the people that make you look good. But that's why I'm here. I want to make a difference. I believe we can make a difference, but it's clearly those two issues, sir. Resource development, but protect our Alaska also.
Thank you. Any questions for the commissioner? Representative Gatto?
To be commissioner, you have to be able to spell tungsten and molybdenum.
Oh, sir, that's easy, because to be fair, this committee, when I got out of college, I had no plans on being a miner, but I went to the Colorado School of Mines, and I had other plans, but they had paid for a full expense scholarship for me to any school I chose, and they entrapped me. They gave me work in the summer. And then they asked if I'd go on a management training program. And the first property I worked at, the primary product was molybdenum, M-O-L-Y-B-D-E-N-U-M, called Molly.
That's what it says here.
And the second byproduct of many byproducts was tungsten. And at Climax, we actually made wolframite, which is iron manganese tungstate. T-U-N-G-S-T-E-N. I know those really well, because in my career I started there in many places, and then I ended up being manager of that property. And in its good days, before the Molly market crashed, there were over 3,000 employees there.
Excuse me, Mr. Irwin, let the record show also that Representative Coring is in attendance. Go ahead.
Thank you. So, did I answer your question? Representative Gatto, to the chair.
That one. Any additional questions, Representative Gatto, or are you?
I'll hold for someone else.
Okay. Anyone else? Representative Seaton.
Thank you. Commissioner, as you are well aware, there was a process that took place in the last couple of years of taking the coastal zone management process out of where it had been to a new program, basically. And a lot of people in local communities feel that they've lost their local much of their local say in that process. And I know with the new governor, you know, transparency and public input has been really important. Do you think that there are any ways that you can work within that program as it's now been changed to reinvigorate the local population so that they feel that they have really some basic input into that program, or where do you think that's going?
Representative Seaton, through the chair, that's a fair question, because I think I'm a real proponent for people visiting with people. And if you look back before I left, we had actually called multiple parties together. I don't remember the exact count. We must have had 40 people in the room, maybe 50. And frankly, I wasn't there to talk. I was there to listen. I've had it directly, but I ran into the folks from the North Slope Borough back in D.C., and although we were talking about AGEA as the primary point from my standpoint, we clearly talked about this also. We want people to have input. I might as well stir the pot further, because we have the Habitat move also. And for the record, sir, I want to let you know, the good people the state's had working on both those projects, our Habitat folks, our biologists, the people in the programs, the people in ACMP. From my career, I've been through many mergers of companies, and it seems like everybody, when you start to a new company, you change the deck chairs. My philosophy is, don't take your energy on moving things. Take your energy on learning what's good and what's bad, and working on the bad and enforcing the good. And I'm intent on looking at those, but understand, I think there's a lot of good with the move too. I'd be misleading to you. But the other thing, to be honest with this committee, I think I've been living down here the last 3 weeks on another issue of oil and gas line, and it's appropriate. Very out of characterization of myself, I really get out first thing and say hello to all my people and hear what they have to say. Honestly, I haven't had a chance to do that yet. So, to be direct, my first steps will be, I will get with the individuals in my department who are running both those programs. We will talk, we'll talk about what's going on, and I am committed to listening to the Alaskan people, as the governor is.
Okay.
Representative Seaton and Representative Porter.
Thank you. And I guess that is your last point there, is what has been lacking before, is listening to the people. I mean, we have situations now where the enforceable policies for local policies, they basically can't write any for anything that could possibly be covered by state law, which basically means everywhere. Or if they have a very important issue such as subsistence on eelgrass beds, they can't write a policy that governs the eelgrass beds. They have to go back through and scientifically define every single eelgrass bed and show what the historic usage of that particular cove or what that particular eelgrass bed was, instead of being able to write a policy to deal with the issue. So I would hope that you would look at that as being, you know, the part of the program that went too far. I mean, the program needed some redoing, but it went so far as to make local input almost meaningless, and look at that and see if you can address that so that local participation in those issues that are really concerning them would be, available.
Representative Seaton, through the chair, I will do that. And for all the committee members' sake, to be fair with the representative, he's even asked me to stop by and talk with him. In between 6 and midnight, we just haven't slipped it in yet, but I'm not being disrespectful. I will come by, but it won't be next week. I'm traveling nonstop through the whole week, but I promise I'll get back to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Porter.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to express my apologies for having to leave here in a few minutes. I'm literally chairing an oil and gas meeting at this moment, but I wanted to come over here to...
And you're doing a fine job, by the way.
...to step in and be a part of this meeting, albeit briefly, and pay my respects to the commissioner, and note that I've been very pleased with the work that he's done, particularly on the IGEA bill. He's worked closely with our office and helped to craft what we think is a good piece of legislation that we are modifying to make it better. We're not going from bad to good. We're going from good to even better with that bill. And I'm really pleased that the governor saw fit to select Mr. Irwin to this position. I will definitely be signing the recommendation sheet that he'd be confirmed by the full body when we get to that point. So with all due respect, I'd like to go back to my meeting.
Is it really important? No. Please do, and thank you for being here.
Representative Coring, through the chair, thank you for the courtesy to come in. I really appreciate that.
You're welcome, sir.
Representative Roses, did you have a question?
Go ahead. I'm going to phrase this as delicately as I can. I'm not looking for any comments on the past administration, but I just want to phrase the question this way. I read the papers, and you don't always get all the facts in the papers, and I'm not looking for details, but I'm just going to phrase the question this way. Do you feel that what transpired in the past will have any linger effects on your ability to be able to move forward and do what you need to in this position?
Representative Roses, through the chair, I appreciate that question. What transpired in the past, and I'm not going to talk about others.
Thank you.
Let me talk about me. I took an oath to do what's best for Alaskans. I just recently took that oath again. I intend to the fullest of my ability, and I did add at the end of the oath, so help me God. I stood up for what was right for Alaskans, and I don't think it will hinder me. I've learned a lot. I actually think it brings more to the table. You always learn from experiences. So, sir, I really believe that I did what's right. I did what many people would do. And who would have thought a year and so many months later I'd be down in front of this group again? But, yes, to the best of my ability, I took that oath to do what's best for Alaska.
Thank you, sir. And if I may follow up, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Representative Roses.
And I will tell you that from comments that I've heard from other individuals when your name was brought forward for this commission, that I only heard words of praise, and I have not heard yet a negative comment from anybody in terms of your ability or your willingness to search for the right answers or to move forward on what you think is what's best for the state of Alaska. So I want to assure you that not only are you committed to doing what's right, but I think people see that in you, and it's to be commended.
Representative Roses, through the chair, thank you, sir. And I do need to be fair to add, there was a whole bunch of good people that supported me. And, you know, when I left, let's face it, commissioners come and go. But when a staff leaves and you have people such as my deputy commissioner who gave up a really good job to come help me, and I needed that help, and that individual has home payments and a teenager at home and gives up a really good job, not as much as was being made before, but when those kind of people support you, I would respectfully ask that remember them. They're the ones who really stood up and helped. So thank you.
Representative Gatto.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I tried to recruit Mark Myers to come back. So you're going to have to do it without him because he's currently working for USGS now. And that says that the president wanted to hire the same person that was working in your group and no longer is because he now has this allegiance to the person that recently hired him. But I believe you have learned a great deal from your past experience. See how wrong things can go. And I think most of us will appreciate that you've had that background and that you took a stand. And like you said, you took a stand for the people. You gave up the money and said, I can't do this. I hope you will take the same stand again. I believe you will. If this is not right, then I don't consider you a quitter. Consider if you can't make the changes you need, that I would expect you to also say, listen, I like the job, but I can't do it, and I'm willing to leave. And I believe that's what you would do.
Representative Gatto, to the best of my ability, I will honor that oath. To party through the chair, sir. Through the second comment, if you can figure out any way I can get Mark Myers back, I'm at the service of the committee. I'll take any suggestions. And yes, we've all learned a lot, and yes, we'll stand up for what's right. We have huge opportunity here, just huge.
Follow-up, Representative Gatto?
Just for the record, when I tried to get Mark Myers back, I didn't go to Mark, I went to his wife. I felt that was dirty.
Are you making any headway?
I said, gee, I bet you really like living in Alaska and your kids, you know, moving their schools, and I bet you miss it, and I couldn't get her to shake. She supported her husband. I said, that's a great family.
Representative Gatto, through the chair, I've tried the flying route because he loves flying and his float plane's sitting there idle. So that's been my angle. But to be fair, Mark has got a position that's incredibly important for the United States and Alaska. But I can assure you he and I talk regularly for technical issues. It's way off hours. But also, we've become real good friends, and I respect him hugely.
Thank you. And with that, I think I'm going to hold additional questions until after. I'd like to go to public testimony and take that. I think online we have Roy Burkhart. Are you online?
Yes.
Are you here to testify on Commissioner Irwin?
Yes.
Please go ahead.
Okay, I'm opposed to the confirmation of Commissioner Irwin. I feel that he doesn't have the diplomacy or the statesmanship to run a department such as DNR. I've had personal experiences. It's a very small issue. It was a Willow boat launch, which I worked on for 15 years. And we came real close here several years ago to get the launch put together and done. And as what's happened in the past, a number of the environmental extremists that are in state parks managed to derail it again. I had written six letters to DNR and so forth. We yet to receive an answer. Linda Hayes has, I know, some of my letters. And I just feel that he doesn't work with all the outdoor organizations, and what happens is then his attitude is reflected in his subordinates, just like Dick Lefebvre for one. And we have a boat launch. Finally, Commissioner Menge approached it in the correct way. He went and hired the exact same firm that had been hired three times before to study the Willow Boat Launch and say, how can it be built, can it be built, and what would be the cost? And they came back with a report. They had it designed and so forth, and the commissioner called me the day he got the report, and I think it was $800,000. The next thing I know, it's up to $1.2 million. I understand that, number one, Governor Murkowski was in favor of that boat launch. Governor Palin is in favor of it. All of the Valley delegation has come out in favor of it over the years. The outdoor organizations come out in favor of it, but we can't get any support from DNR or from state parks. And I think he would be the wrong person for the job. And under no circumstances would I ask you to even consider confirming him until he put on record that he would support the Willow Boat Launch and demand that his support and support it also.
Thank you. Are there any questions of Mr. Burkhart? Thank you, Roy. Herb Simon, are you on?
Yes, I'm here.
Please go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First of all, I appreciate the opportunity to testify at this very important committee meeting. I have a question for Commissioner Irwin, if I may.
You can ask it of me, and if I deem it appropriate, I'll ask it of him, if that's okay.
Very well. My idea is, for example, we've operated, or the TAPS has been operating for in excess of 30 years, and we have some big projects coming up, like opening up of the getting into the gas business, and this Pebble Mine deal out on the Western Peninsula at Bristol Bay. And I would, my question is, I think, or what does Commissioner Irwin think of employing what we've learned with these mega projects like TAPS and other mining operations in the state? Why can't, when we permit these operations, why can't we plow some preventative measures into the, as conditions of those permits? For example, inspection criteria on the pipeline, the TAPS, or any other pipeline, and the cleanup of some of these mines. I'm from the Neltina, and we have mining equipment scattered all over this part of the world where, you know, the mining operation was permitted and it gunny sacked or somebody died or whatever. And all that junk is scattered all over the country. Why can't things like that be plowed into a conditional use type permit so that, one, this mining equipment is removed from the sites, like with TAPS or any other pipeline? Why we don't plow inspection criteria into the conditional use permit of the pipeline? And in other words, I'm going not for the sake of environmentalism, but preventative measures. I think, for example, we just recently, in the past several years, renewed the permit for TAPS, and then through the jousting with the big oil companies and the state, you know, suddenly we come to find out a lot of those feeder lines up north are corroded and 30 years after the fact, where that should have been periodic inspection criteria. Anyway, that's the essence of my question.
Thank you. Do you have any additional testimony?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, well, I appreciate that, and I would be willing to, you should stay on and listen, because I'd be willing to venture that those questions will be asked and answered during the rest of this hearing at some point.
Very well, thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else online to testify? Is there anyone in the audience that'd like to testify? Hearing none, I'm going to close public testimony. Mr. Irwin, the only people that you need to answer questions from are from this body, if you feel compelled to answer that question. He's had some good questions, I think, that I will ask eventually. But if you feel compelled to respond to either of those, I would certainly give you an opportunity to do that. But don't feel it's necessary.
Mr. Chair, if you wish, I don't mind. I think the public comments are great. There's a long history with the boat ramp of what was requested of DNR, the funding available, etc. In fact, one was sort of put in with the money available in a spot the DNR people strongly felt, don't put it in there because it'll wash away. It washed away. There is a boat ramp that's badly needed out there. I've actually visited there twice in a past life, you know, when I was here before. And it's a funding issue. And really, that boat ramp ties into several funding issues, and I certainly got to be on record to you, sir, that I support the governor's budget. But that boat ramp and access to the world and parks, that whole issue, you know, there's two sides. I mean, you heard it, I want resource development, and I believe that's what can help fund some of these things. We are so rich in parks, and we want people to put their boats in the river, but you also got to do it right. We're legally bound to do it safely. You can't just throw something in and not have the full money. So all of these things are an issue. I'll go down a short rabbit trail if you'll allow me to on parks. I think the parks people have done a tremendous job in keeping parks open by having private people come in and manage them. And those private people have done a good job. But there is an economic motivation there, and you get further and further behind the maintenance. Somewhere long term, and it needs to be shorter than long term in my mind, read what they're doing with parks in Europe. I love reading it. I don't want to reinvent the wheel. And what other people do around the world with parks that don't hold a candle to ours. So boat ramps and access and all these things I believe in. If we've been disrespectful somehow to an individual, we don't mean that. And maybe we have, maybe we haven't, because I don't recall the gentleman. But he deserves an answer, and if there's something we're missing, we need to be paying attention, because he's an Alaskan like everyone else. The second question, boy, I could talk for hours on it, but there's a history of mining that there are some junk places out there, and we don't want those in Alaska. But if I might go to one example, I helped purchase, design, set up, and get the Fort Knox mine in operation. There are checks, and there's still checks going on. But if you go look in that valley, in my first experience with habitat people and fish and game people, the mine's high on the ridge where it's at, but this valley had frankly been torn up terribly with placer mining. Not the new style with plans and reclamation. I'm talking about the old timers. They didn't know at the time what we really had for the environment. They tore through the permafrost. That melted every summer. The black was going through the Little Chena through Fairbanks. It was close to being an impaired water body. It was to the point it was catch and release for grayling on a wonderful river system. But here's what you can do. The company worked with Fish and Game and Habitat. We had to put in a 385-acre-foot water reservoir, very sizable. They said, let us work with you, and here's what we'll get out of it. You'll get your reservoir, leave humps in here, and let's take all these placer miner ponds and we'll reclaim them and connect them together. The goal was, not only did the mine get its water, we cleaned up the river because now all the solids have been taken care of going downstream. The goal was maybe 5,000 to 10,000 catchable size grayling at the end of the mine life, which was 12 years at the time. The first year that this was in operation, we saw an incredible amount of fry in the little ponds, but we had one pipe into the big pond. The fry were disappearing. Well, we've got some really big burbot in the channel. So we had to go back, and Fish and Game helped us, and it's to their credit. Habitat people who understand things, Elot. Elot works for Habitat now. He's second in command under Kerry Howard. Superb people. Their answer wasn't to say no. Their answer was, how do we get this resource development and get to yes and everybody wins? There are so many catchable size grayling in that pond. They're going over the spillway. They're tagged. They're going through Little Chena. We're starting to find tagged grayling up by Delta. So, was it done wrong in the past? Sure, we've all learned. Do you check on these things? Do you do things better? It's imperative. And if I might, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to talk about Pebble. I think we should be asking about Pebble. And there's two clear issues to me on Pebble. I won't budge on these two. So you might as well know who I am. And I made sure the governor and I were in sync. First and foremost, I will never allow something to hurt a renewable resource called a fishery that's world-class like Bristol Bay. Period. That's not me, and that's not my philosophy, and that's not this administration's philosophy. The second part is, I believe in resource development. I, as a commissioner, don't even know what to judge on yet. I've heard big things and big numbers, but here's what I'll expect because I believe in a process. If we don't follow a process as a state, you randomly chuck this out, maybe a borough throws this one out, individuals throw this out, it's out of my view, whatever. We're not that kind of state. We've all taken a stand, we're going to be fair. You have to have a clear process. And what will I demand before my people start looking at that process? I want to know financial assurances. Where are the deep pockets that pay for any problem? Reclamation plans. Don't tell me how you're going to start it uptake and tell me how you're going to shut it down. Tell me how you're going to, and this is my background, I know the answers, what I should be looking for. Tell me what you're going to do if you have to interrupt in midstream. What are you going to do with acid rock drainage? What if you're in construction and have to stop? What type of earthquake can you stand? We can't stand a 1 in 100 chance of something going away in that area. We're accountable. We as Alaskans are accountable. I can tell you the dam at Fort Knox can withstand a 0.27G ground acceleration. Well, if there's a big earthquake in Fairbanks, my family and I have always talked about we ought to go stand on the dam because it'll knock you down, but it'll be there. Can they tie it into bedrock? What's the drainage pattern? There's so many questions I'd want to see before we even start the process, but it's got to be allowed to be a fair process. Otherwise, I know what companies do. If they don't have a fair chance to explore, to study it, to put plans together and to be evaluated correctly, they go elsewhere. But it isn't the one site that's in jeopardy. And I'm not preaching here, I'm passionate about it. The next place is in jeopardy because of this reason, the next place because of that reason. Mining, oil and gas, fisheries, they all then get challenged. We need a process, and if there's something wrong with the process, it's my job to listen and fix the process, beef it up. It's also my job, if there's duplication, to remove duplication. That works both ways. But Pebble's so important in our state right now. Resources, you all have a huge responsibility, and I know you recognize it. I have a huge responsibility to do that part correctly. So I hope that answers my position on Pebble.
Any additional questions? Representative Seaton.
Thank you. Moving for a minute to agriculture. We just had the farmers here today. We're hearing a lot about agriculture not getting or getting the real short end in DNR and not being promoted and not expanding or having any advocacy for expansion in our state. And would you give me your philosophy on agriculture as far as, whether it should be promoted or how should we be looking at agriculture in our state and what's DNR's position on all that?
Representative Seaton, through the chair, thank you. First off, and I'm glad Representative Corrine's not here anymore, but you can tell him, I skipped out yesterday on a meeting of oil and gas for a half hour and met with two other representatives and an individual from the cruise industry. And we were talking about, $210 million, huge number of meals served on the cruise ships every day coming to Alaska, through a season. I heard about one farmer who had to throw out 1,500 tons, and I'm pretty sure of that number. Huge numbers of meals. Someone had to throw out 1,500 tons of potatoes at the end of the year. And yet the cruise ships wanted them. We can eliminate a middleman. There's boxing problems. Some produce turns bad because it looks, that lettuce turns bad because there's staples instead of plastic. Representative Seaton, ag does take the short end at times. It's unmistakable. And I think ag is also part of my world, and it needs to get back to being looked at as a real business. I think there's niche markets. I don't want the dairy people mad at me with this comment, and I mean nothing ill by it against them. I hope they succeed. Boy, things are stacking against those folks. Border crossing, or the closures on mad cow disease issues, they can't overwinter them. They can't, if they slaughter them, how do they replenish their stock for the next summer? There's some tough issues on ag just being Alaska, but I think there's huge opportunities. But to be fair, I don't have answers on some of them either. The meat cutting plant, the milk processing plant, they're huge. They're huge for what we're doing, and that breeds inefficiencies. We've talked about it in the past. I've heard it talked about. We've got to have a business plan. And I understand business plans, and I hope we can focus on it. It's a goal. And how we pull all those together, we've got to get distributed down the line business decisions, delegation of authority, so people can work on that.
Follow up, Richard Seaver.
Yeah, and a follow up because you're probably, or you may be aware that the other farmers around here, the shellfish farmers, are feeling uncomfortable in fish and game because, and the commissioner of fish and game was before us for confirmation hearings in the fisheries committee. And he was not opposed to considering moving of the mariculture industry because that's not within the core mission of fish and game. They want to maintain permitting and biological checks and balances, but it's just not something that they have ever been comfortable doing. It's, you know, they're in capture fisheries of wild stocks is basically what happened. So there is a bill I know being drafted, it's not my bill, but being drafted to look at shifting mariculture to DNR as far as in agriculture because it seemed to make more sense there. I'm trying to figure out whether that is something as far as oversight on the shellfish farms throughout Alaska is something that you think would coordinate well with agriculture, and whether agriculture is going to have a high enough priority so that that's the home that they should look for.
Representative Seaton, through the chair, the answer to your second part of the question is ag has to get attention. Your first part, sir, I honestly don't know. And I got to talk to some folks in DNR also. I'm not going to give you an answer that I just don't know. I would like to talk about how it fits into our world with regulations, how it fits in with authority, and I think I'd better be able to assure you ag is going to be okay before we fit it into ag. But I don't know how to answer that, honestly.
Okay.
I can get back to you on it, but I don't know.
I'd appreciate that. Of course, DNR does have the permitting for shellfish farm sites,
yes,
for mariculture sites. But, and of course, ADF&G has the biological permitting, and nobody is talking about shifting that. It's, mm-hmm, it's the home for the promotion and for getting that aspect of farming moving in this state instead of languishing. And although it's small in numbers, it's small Alaskans all around the around the Gulf of Alaska anyway, and so.
Representative Seaton, through the chair, another thing I can, and I talked about skipping out on a meeting, I think you'd be pleased to hear, I'm sure you all have heard that, and I heard a gentleman say he didn't think much of Dick LaFever. I think the world of him. He was one who left and supported me, but I like him because he, at Fort Knox, he was in state when I was here. He started the large mine project team and permitting. He helped develop that into the large project team. He cares about the environment. But when he came back, his first task was to get the lawsuit solved on Alaska Grown. That was unbearable when I heard that. We have real farmers who care about Alaskan Grown logo, and they were using it, and the state was saying, no, it belongs to everybody, and we're suing each other. I'm happy to say the first day he met with everybody, because of the participants, because of the law department, and because of Dick LaFever, deputy commissioner, that was solved in one day. So we are giving attention to those issues. We can't be wasting money suing each other.
Representative Roses, then Representative Wilson.
Thank you. I just wanted to follow up a little bit on the agriculture issue.
Sure.
One of the things that I think we can take a look at and maybe work towards is I know that in some of those leases that they have difficulty borrowing money to build infrastructure because the commercial lending institutions are going to want them to have a lease that's at least 5 years longer than what the mortgage would be. And so on a lot of those situations, they're sort of hamstrung because there's no guarantee at the end of that lease that they're going to be the one that gets the property back, and they don't want to invest money in an infrastructure, and then you go to a bid process on the land, and somebody comes in and outbids them, and now they've put all the infrastructure in, and they get the land. So I think if there's some way we can build in a system by which those that have, if it's just strictly they've leased the land and they've made no improvements on it, then an open bidding process seems to be fair. But if somebody's coming in to bid on a piece of land where there's been some development, some infrastructure built into that where it becomes a viable commercial enterprise, then to open it up and it just looks strictly a lease based on what the land would be to the state, that there ought to be something in there to guarantee that the infrastructure that they've built and invested into that is taken into account as part of that lease process, because otherwise there's no incentive for people to make it work better if there's the potential of losing it all.
Representative Roses, through the chair, I know I'm supposed to get in and out of here in a hurry, but this is an opportunity for us to talk. So, Mr. Chair, can I expand on that and probably cause myself more problems?
We welcome that.
Okay. You bring up an important issue because it's not just on this issue.
I know.
It troubles me when we have someone, I can think of a guide, who comes along, and I've seen, he's shown me pictures of, he bid on an area for land use, and it was a mess. He improved it. He cleaned up the mess, hauled it out on his own, built some temporary structures, made it nice. Now you got the conflict. What rights does he have to permanently stay there versus how do you bid that? So that's a problem not only in your example, but in the guide world. Let me expand that further because we've got some tough decisions. For full disclosure, I just worked at Golden Valley Electric Association. They have an issue that cooperatives are going to have, and I'm a firm believer in renewable energy. In fact, I believe that while we're in our gas cycle and we're making money, we'd better be really funding renewables. So I really believe in that. Well, here's the problem they have. You get a land use permit, and they spend millions to go out, and it's like an explorer looking for gold. They're looking for wind. Well, then they put up test towers, and Golden Valley's put up, and these are big towers, 350-meter towers and 120-meter towers. These are not small investments for test work. Do they have any kind of mining right to that, or a wind right, a discovery right or not? And to compound that further, how about geothermal? So, Representative Roses, I think you're right on, and we as a state, a department, we've really got to be we can't just be talking about these things. We've got to come up with the real Solomon answers of what's fair for people. And everybody wants access, everybody wants a chance to bid. And I hear arguments from the other side. Let's take the hunting guide. Someone wants to move into the area. He says, what right does he have? Just because he came in and cleaned it up, he got the benefit. I would like an equal chance. So there's your issue stirs the pot in my mind a lot because there's tough issues.
Yeah, if I may follow up, I thought a little bit about this. I was good friends for many years with a guy that was responsible for handling all of the leases for grazing lands for BLM. He's since passed away, very, very likable fellow, Peanuts, Maine. You may have known him. But I think probably the only fair way to do that is that part of that bid for somebody that's going to take over from somebody that already had it has to include, over the life of the new lease, if they happen to be a new lease holder, must somehow include some kind of an amortization to pay back to the individual that built that infrastructure that they're going to inherit, so that at least there's a hold harmless clause for the person that went to the trouble of fixing it. At least the other guy doesn't walk in and just get it for nothing because he happened to outbid somebody by $5. But that's sort of a something I've been looking along. So
Representative Roses, through the chair, Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure the right procedure here.
Me either.
I'd like to hear more about that. Maybe I should get with Representative Roses, or it's the right for this committee. I'm at your service, but, sir, I'd like to hear more about what you just said.
I'm not sure now would be the appropriate time, but I would encourage you to get with him. I think we'd like to try to get you out of here sometime this week. So.
Sometime this week, sir.
It is Friday, so that's Representative Wilson.
That's the very subject that I was concerned about. And one other thing that goes along with the leases, because I talked with the Farm Bureau people too today. When they get down to the end of the lease, and then they can't get grants or loans or whatever for whatever reason because they don't have access to that longer lease anymore, is there a possibility that when they get down to the end that there can be a clause in there that for some kind of purposes that it can be renewed? I mean, to begin with, to anticipate that ahead of time, realizing that maybe 5 years out from when the lease is ended, maybe that's the time to start talking about renewing so that they can have access to some of this other stuff.
Mm-hmm. Representative Wilson, through the chair, I think tied in with the comments from Representative Roses, we got to solve some of these because real people are getting hurt on this. And Mr. Chair, I don't know if it's right to ask a question back of the committee, but when we talk about ag, I've got real concerns because the revolving loan fund's running out. What are we going to do for these people as a state on funding for agriculture, whether we have a division or not? And I don't expect an answer back, but I want to let you know that's also churning in my head. That will run out here, and we want to protect those folks who are counting on it.
And I wouldn't expect anyone to answer that either. But Representative Gatto?
Yeah. thanks, Mr. Chair. I am really concerned about disappearing farmland in the Mat-Su. I think a builder just picked a prime piece of real estate for 300 homes, and it's all prime because it's all nice, loamy farmland. And once it's gone, of course, we have more subdivisions and fewer open spaces. Is there some way to ensure that farms remain farms? And I don't want to penalize the farmer, so is there a way for the state to buy the agricultural right or somehow ensure that the farmer's not losing, but yet the community is entitled to spend some money but reserve land to be farmland, because that's our open spaces?
Representative Gatto, through the chair, I'm afraid I'm going to have to give you the answer that I gave Representative Seaton. Honestly, I don't know right now. It's something that I can certainly think about. I don't know. You raised several issues in my head there of if someone works hard and gets land and they pay for it and it's paid off, what point is that their land? And they can do what as they choose with it. I don't know. There's some real fairness issues there. Talking for myself, I like open spaces. But if that farmer has cleared it and worked their hearts out, and I know their kids have been out there working hard with the whole family, and it becomes their right, it's their land. Boy, that's one of the things that made our country and our state so special. It's our land. It's people's land. I don't want to take that right away. But maybe there's a way on some selling of state land or granting of state land for a specific issue. Maybe you can take it back. I hate taking away the rights of the people if someone works your heart out at your land.
Representative Gatto?
It's just a question. When I lived in Fairbanks, and I got there quite a long time ago, it was in the 60s, but the pipeline was beginning. And there are some homesteaders who said, you know, we carried water. We had a walk-in during breakup. But it was our land, and now because of appreciation, I have to sell the land in order to pay the taxes. And I said, boy, I knew something was wrong with that picture. Similarly, in the valley, I have a personal friend who owns a farm. They've been offered multiple millions, but they're farmers. They don't want to be anything else. Mom's 90, he's 50-something. His dad patented, not potatoes, I think trees. They've been very active in the university system. Pardon me? Active in the university system, and they have done more for the valley with their land than anyone would have expected. But they can be run off their land because we can essentially say, listen, your land is now worth $2.5 million. As far as they're concerned, they don't care. They just don't want to be run off their land. And I would like if there was a way to say, listen, I'm going to buy something from you, but when you sell your 160 acres or 320 acres, that's all part of the price, and we have to kind of get our money back. But for the meanwhile, we, the state, would own a certain privilege, and that is to keep the land as agricultural, and that's the direction I'm going.
Different subject for a different time. I would like to sort of wrap up here. Representative Seaton, do you have
a question? Representative Gatto, co-chair, had called a hearing, and we had one on gas-to-liquids technology. We've been looking at the gas line on the North Slope as the gas line, and hoping that if there is a gas line, people will inadvertently discover more oil and will keep taps going without it becoming uneconomical. And we were looking at gas-to-liquids because that generates those hundreds of thousands of barrels to keep taps going at a low tariff rate. The question I have for you is, are we looking at anything other than as gas? Are we looking at any projects in a two-phase so that there's part of it goes gas to liquids to keep the Trans-Alaska pipeline going in an economical form, and the other go as gas, or have we only been looking at this point from the state's point of view? I'm not saying what's being proposed, mm-hmm. but have we been looking at that at all from the state's point of view as to trying to keep taps going?
Representative Seaton, through the chair. Part of the reason, the biggest thing we want to do right now to keep taps going is to make sure we have access to the independents, to the other companies who are coming up on the slope and find oil along with gas. Case in point, Point Thompson. We hear about all the gas at Point Thompson, but when you talk with the Mark Myerses of the world and your 200 to 400 million barrels of liquids there, and the possibility that that might have to be processed first before you get at the gas, because both AOGCC has to worry about molecule recovery, DNR has to worry about molecule recovery and economics. It's a requirement of the state. We can't leave liquids behind. So from that standpoint, we're very focused on it. I have not been personally involved in any state programs that I know of. They're really pushing gas to liquids, but we're certainly read or aware of anything the companies do. I'm not going to preclude that, but I think our priorities right now, our value is making sure we have access for people who find oil to the facilities. And DNR wrote a really good report on that and some of the issues with it shortly before I left last time. And then on the gas getting, and it's paramount here, that whatever gas line we have it so it's expandable and people who find gas can monetize it. But no, specifically to your other question, I don't know.
Just a short follow-up.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman. And I guess the other question on that revolves around a wet gas line versus a dry gas line, and whether we're basically worrying about taps becoming uneconomic because we allow or permit a very wet gas line to take those liquids off, and then tap sits there and becomes economics, and we have a tariff over $10 a barrel and those kind of things. Are we looking at that when we're balancing the proposals that might come through as far as the effect of not only on the gas line but on taps as well?
Representative Seaton, through the chair, that answer is yes. But we also, there's an add-on to that that's very important, that, and I'm sure the committee's aware of it. The liquids in the gas, where does it go? Do we develop a whole additional business in this state? What are the opportunities with the liquids? Do they just get sent down to an Alberta or a Henry Hub or the West Coast if it's LNG? So we need to be very wise on the value of these products. And again, if we want careers in the state, the more we can be integrated to take value out of them, the better.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. I have a couple of questions. As you know, there's some bills working their way through, or maybe not, regarding the Habitat Division and the fishing game. Some of the things that I hear is that maybe fishing game and Department of Natural Resources don't enforce the laws in an equal way, or maybe DNR doesn't have the enforcement, fishing game does, brown shirts, however you want to go. So my concern is that in the Habitat Division, we enforce the laws, we have the enforcement capabilities. I don't want to send a signal that we're not enforcing habitat laws because DNR either won't, can't, or chooses not to. And can you address that a little bit about the enforcement and the things that DNR does with their Habitat Division? Can you just address that a little bit, and then I think we'll be done.
Yes, sir, I certainly can, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the question. First off, Habitat has worked so successfully in DNR that I think the number is around 99% compliance with Habitat permits. On the other hand, the timber industry is very upset with Habitat because Habitat won't cave on some of the issues to not put in pipes in streams where there's fish. I absolutely believe Habitat has been enforcing those issues. I had an opportunity to hear a little of the testimony against Habitat. That was so terribly wrong for the people I know who are in Habitat. Habitat, to the best of my knowledge, maybe there's some hard feelings on employees somewhere or those who didn't transfer over, but let me speak for the Habitat people I know. They wouldn't compromise their principles. The only difference we asked them when they came to DNR, and I talked with all of them. First off, I said, you're not coming to DNR hell. That was a quote. But the second thing is, I don't want your principles compromised. Just like the Fort Knox example, how do we get the yes that the resource development goes ahead and Habitat's protected or even wins? That's the philosophy, and that's the philosophy I want. I have very little tolerance for anyone who wants to screw up Alaska, because that's one of my two principles. And if there's problem areas we're not enforcing, and I'll step out again to give another example, because there's multitudes here. Land use. I just heard not long ago of an example where an airplane was flying over some tracked rig tearing up the countryside. We don't have enough people to be policing all over, but we will follow up with the people where we can. Has the history of DNR done it right? No, sir. Do you always want to? Absolutely, because there should be zero tolerance for people who are screwing up our Alaska.
Any additional questions?
Not a question, just one quick comment, and it's on a personal nature and also a little bit self-serving at the same time. I want to, first of all, congratulate you on your longevity of your marriage, and I understand the importance of that relationship, and because today is my wife's 39th wedding anniversary, so I know how important it is.
You should have said something. We could have had cake.
Pizza.
Pizza. We did have pizza.
Sir, if I had a glass of water or something, I'd toast you.
Any other questions of the commissioner? What is the will of the body? Representative Gatto?
Mr. Chair, I'll move that the Natural Resource Committee has reviewed the qualifications of Mr. Tom Irwin for the post of Commissioner of Natural Resources and recommend that his name be forwarded for consideration by the joint session of the legislature.
Thank you. Hearing no objections or seeing no objections? Thank you, Commissioner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Committee.
Appreciate it. Thank you, sir. With that, we will move to Kathy Forster. Kathy, I understand you're online.
Yes, I am.
I appreciate your attendance, and I guess I'll start with you the same way I started with Commissioner Irwin. Why do you want to do this job?
Well, there are three reasons. Please forgive me. I'm going to be I'm in bed with bronchitis, so bear with me. I'm going to cough every now and then. There are three reasons that I would like to be considered for reappointment. The first is that Alaska's given so much to me and my family that I'm grateful for the chance to do something to give back. My sons tell me repeatedly how thankful they are that they grew up here, and that their goal is to stay here for the rest of their lives. And I want to do what I can to make this place the kind of place that will keep them here. My second reason is purely business. The AOGCC is in the middle of several extremely important and highly technical projects right now. Many of these are heavily dominated by engineering issues. I'm sorry. We just completed a technical study that will assist us in determining the appropriate allowable gas offtake for Prudhoe Bay when we have North Slope gas sales. And we're in the early phases of a similar study for Point Thompson. We're also in the process of updating our regulations regarding well safety systems. And we're in the conceptual phase of a review of our regulations and processes involving gas disposition, such as flaring. The state has an investment in the time I've already spent understanding these complex issues, and I feel that it would be a big setback for someone new to have to get up to speed on them, especially midstream. And my last reason is, throughout my career as a petroleum engineer, I've been blessed with wonderful opportunities to learn and contribute, and my time with the AOGCC has been one such opportunity, and I'd like to continue doing that. And I'm especially pleased and honored to be on a commission that's well-respected and work with intelligent, honest, and ethical, and hard-working people like the other two commissioners, Stan Seamount and John Norman. And when I'm feeling better, they'll owe me a glass of wine for that comment. I'd like to close by thanking you all for taking the time this afternoon to consider me for this important position.
Thank you. Are there any questions of Kathy from the committee? Representative Gatto?
Thanks. Kathy, listen, I've been looking forward to meeting you. I have your resume in front of me, and it really looks good. I'm just curious, with highest honors, that mean the highest of anybody ever?
That's what engineers aren't smart enough to speak Latin, so that's the same as summa cum laude.
Oh, boy. Well, I'm an engineer, too. I don't speak Latin, and I'm not a summa cum laude. I'm not a laude at all. So congratulations.
Thank you very much. Through the chair, I'm sorry.
That's quite all right. We're somewhat informal during these proceedings. Any additional questions for Kathy? Representative Seaton.
Yeah, I just wanted to say, Kathy, it's been a pleasure talking with you and your openness in the process so far. And so I appreciate your expertise that you bring to the commission and look forward to working with you in the future.
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, I've thoroughly enjoyed working with you, and thank you for the compliment.
Thank you. Representative Gatto?
Kathy, just to follow up, as an AOGCC person, would you be able to comment on committee hearings that revolve around passage of AGEA? That's a long breath. I kind of tell what that answer is.
Well, you know, I have a lot of opinions as a voter and a citizen of Alaska, but as a commissioner for the Alaska Oil and Gas Conservation Commission, you know, I need to stick to my knitting, and that's conservation of the resource. So what my agency is doing so that we're prepared for whatever gas pipeline deal we end up with are, one, make sure that when we're ready to sell gas from Prudhoe, we're selling the right amount and not too much so that we don't lose the oil resources associated. And as Commissioner Irwin mentioned, we're also looking at the conservation and waste issues around Point Thompson, because as he said, there are, you know, 200, 400 million barrels of condensate, which is liquid hydrocarbon, that is at risk if we go into an immediate gas blowdown in that reservoir. And as far as the rest of the points of AGEA, I just have my own personal opinions as a citizen.
Okay. Thank you, and we would not expect you to share those here. Any additional questions? Kathy, I'll have to tell you, I was really on board until I saw you graduated from University of Texas. Being
is that Chairman Johnson talking?
Yes, being from Oklahoma, I have a little bit of rub with them, but it revolves around football, so I guess it's not oil and gas, so I guess we'll be okay with that.
Well, Chairman Johnson, I can guarantee you that I never played college football. So
okay, well, you've got my vote again then. You're back in my good stead. Any additional questions? I'm sorry you're feeling bad, and thank you for attending telephonically. Representative Roses?
Just a comment. Ma'am, there are also some people that are not sure that Chairman Johnson played football either. He was a kicker.
and you're accurate with that. Thank you. And I appreciate you putting that on the record, Representative Roses. Any other questions for Kathy? Kathy, thank you so much. Hang on just a second. We will see if there's any public testimony as a formality. Is there anyone online who would like to testify in the confirmation of Kathy Forrester? Is there anyone in the audience that would like to testify? Hearing none, I would like to close public testimony. Kathy, thank you so much for attending. Sorry you're feeling bad. Hope you get to feeling better soon.
Thank you very much.
And with that, any committee discussion?
I just have one comment.
Representative Roses?
I certainly don't want Ms. Forrester to assume that because we queried the last commissioner for a little over an hour and that this one may not go nearly that long, that we find that this to be any less valuable, but we are probably running out of time, feeling tired, and also very sympathetic for your medical condition. So,
through the chair, Representative Roses, I was playing the sympathy card big, so thank you.
It's working.
Well, in that case, I have some additional questions. No, no, actually not. Kathy, thank you so much, and thank you for your service.
Thank you.
Any other questions of the from the committee? What would be the will of the committee?
That's one of those sheets. Look, that Paul, can you just read
Paul, would you read the top of that sheet, please?
Sure. The Resources Committee has reviewed the qualifications for Governor's appointee for the Oil and Gas Conservation Commission, Ms. Kathy P. Forrester of Anchorage, and is forwarding, and the motion is to forward her name to the joint
session of the legislature.
Joint session for the legislature for consideration.
Thank you. Team nominations, I like it. Any objection? Hearing none, Kathy, either condolences or congratulations, depending on how it works out. I hope you get to feeling better, and thank you for attending.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Is there any other business to come before the committee today? With that, we will stand adjourned. Do you have anything, Carl?
No, I'm fine, thank you.
Okay, we will stand adjourned. It is 2:10. I would like to thank everyone for their attendance and being here to make a quorum. Thank you.
I wanted to point out.